This audiobook provided courtesy of www.paradisetbc.org.
Antiquities of the Jews, Book 10, containing the interval of 182 years and a half, from the captivity of the 10 tribes to the first year of Cyrus. Chapter 1. It was now the 14th year of the government of Hezekiah, king of the 2 tribes, when the king of Assyria, whose name was Sennacherib, made an expedition against him with a great army, and took all the cities of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin by force. And when he was ready to bring his army against Jerusalem, Hezekiah sent ambassadors to him beforehand, and promised to submit, and pay what tribute he should appoint. He replied, Sennacherib, when he heard of what offers the ambassadors made, resolved not to proceed in the war, but to accept of the proposals that were made him, and if he might receive 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold, he promised that he would depart in a friendly manner, and he gave security upon oath to the ambassadors that he would then do him no harm, but go away as he came. So Hezekiah submitted, and emptied his treasures, and sent the money, as supposing he should be freed from his enemy, and from any further distress about his kingdom. Accordingly, the Assyrian king took it, and yet had no regard to what he had promised, but while he himself went to the war against the Egyptians and Ethiopians, he left his general Rabshakeh, and 2 other of his principal commanders, with great forces, to destroy Jerusalem. The names of the 2 other commanders were Dartan and Rabsaris. Now as soon as they were come before the walls, they pitched their camp, and sent messengers to Hezekiah, and desired that they might speak with him, but he did not himself come out to them for fear, but he sent 3 of his most intimate friends. The name of one was Eliakim, who was over the kingdom, and Shebna, and Joah the recorder. So these men came out, and stood over against the commanders of the Assyrian army, and when Rabshakeh saw them, he bid them go, and speak to Hezekiah, in the manner following, that Sennacherib, the great king, desires to know of him, on whom it is that he relies, and depends, in flying from his lord, and will not hear him, nor admit his army into the city. Is it on account of the Egyptians, and in hopes that his army would be beaten by them? Whereupon he lets him know, that if this be what he expects, he is a foolish man, and like one who leans on a broken reed, while such a one will not only fall down, but will have his hand pierced and hurt by it. That he ought to know he makes this expedition against him by the will of God, who hath granted this favor to him, that he shall overthrow the kingdom of Israel, and that in the very same manner he shall destroy those that are his subjects also. When Rabshakeh had made the speech in the Hebrew tongue, for he was skillful in that language, Eliakim was afraid lest the multitude that heard him should be disturbed, so he desired him to speak in the Syrian tongue. But the general, understanding what he meant, and perceiving the fear that he was in, he made his answer with a greater and a louder voice, but in the Hebrew tongue, and said, that since they all heard what were the king's commands, they would consult their own advantage in delivering up themselves to us, for it is plain that both you and your king dissuade the people from submitting by vain hopes, and so induce them to resist. But if you be courageous, and think to drive our forces away, I am ready to deliver to you 2,000 of these horses that are with me for your use, if you can set as many horsemen on their backs, and show your strength. But what you have not you cannot produce. Why therefore do you delay to deliver up yourselves to a superior force, who can take you without your consent? Although it will be safer for you to deliver yourselves up voluntarily, while a forcible capture, when you are beaten, must appear more dangerous, and will bring further calamities upon you. When the people, as well as the ambassadors, heard what the Assyrian commander said, they related it to Hezekiah, who thereupon put off his royal apparel, and clothed himself with sackcloth, and took the habit of a mourner, and, after the manner of his country, he fell upon his face, and besought God, and entreated him to assist them. Now they had no other hope of relief. He also sent some of his friends, and some of the priests, to the prophet Isaiah, and desired that he would pray to God, and offer sacrifices for their common deliverance, and so put up supplications to him, that he would have indignation at the expectations of their enemies, and have mercy upon his people. And when the prophet had done accordingly, an oracle came from God to him, and encouraged the king, and his friends, that were about him, and foretold that their enemies should be beaten without fighting, and should go away in an ignominious manner, and not with that insolence which they now show, for that God would take care that they should be destroyed. He also foretold that Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, should fail of his purpose against Egypt, and that when he came home he should perish by the sword. About the same time also the king of Assyria wrote an epistle to Hezekiah, in which he said he was a foolish man, in supposing that he should escape from being his servant, since he had already brought under many and great nations, and he threatened that when he took him, he would utterly destroy him, unless he now opened the gates, and willingly received his army into Jerusalem. When he read this epistle, he despised it, on account of the trust that he had in God. But he rolled up the epistle, and laid it up within the temple. And as he made his further prayers to God, for the city, and for the preservation of all the people, the prophet Isaiah said that God had heard his prayer, and that he should not be besieged at this time by the king of Assyria, that for the future he might be secure of not being at all disturbed by him, and that the people might go on peaceably, and without fear, with their husbandry, and other affairs. But after a little while the king of Assyria, when he had failed of his treacherous designs against the Egyptians, returned home without success. On the following occasion, he spent a long time in the siege of Pelusium, and when the banks that he had raised over against the walls were of a great height, and when he was ready to make an immediate assault upon them, but heard that Tirhaka, king of the Ethiopians, was coming, and bringing great forces to aid the Egyptians, and was resolved to march through the desert, and so to fall directly upon the Assyrians, this king Sennacherib was disturbed at the news, and, as I said before, left Pelusium, and returned back without success. Now concerning this Sennacherib, Herodotus also says, in the second book of his histories, how this king came against the Egyptian king, who was the priest of Vulcan, and that as he was besieging Pelusium, he broke up the siege on the following occasion. This Egyptian priest prayed to God, and God heard his prayer, and sent a judgment upon the Arabian king. But in this Herodotus was mistaken, when he called this king not king of the Assyrians, but of the Arabians, for he saith that a multitude of mice gnawed to pieces in one night both the bowels, and the rest of the armor of the Assyrians, and that it was on that account that the king, when he had no bowels left, drew off his army from Pelusium. And Herodotus does indeed give us this history, nay, and Berosus, who wrote of the affairs of Chaldea, makes mention of this king Sennacherib, and that he ruled over the Assyrians, and that he made an expedition against all Asia and Egypt, and says thus, now, when Sennacherib was returning from his Egyptian war to Jerusalem, he found his army under Rabshakeh his general in danger by a plague, for God had sent a pestilential distemper upon his army, and on the very first night of the siege, 185,000, with their captains and generals, were destroyed. So the king was in a great dread, and in a terrible agony at this calamity, and being in great fear for his whole army, he fled with the rest of his forces to his own kingdom, and to his city Nineveh, and when he had abode there a little while, he was treacherously assaulted, and died by the hands of his elder sons, Adramelech and Sarasar, and was slain in his own temple, which was called Araski. Now these sons of his were driven away on account of the murder of their father by the citizens, and went into Armenia, while Assaritchidas took the kingdom of Sennacherib. And this proved to be the conclusion of this Assyrian expedition against the people of Jerusalem. Chapter 2. Now King Hezekiah, being thus delivered, after a surprising manner, from the dread he was in, offered thank offerings to God, with all his people, because nothing else had destroyed some of their enemies, and made the rest so fearful of undergoing the same fate, that they departed from Jerusalem, but that divine assistance. Yet, while he was very zealous and diligent about the worship of God, did he soon afterwards fall into a severe distemper, insomuch that the physicians despaired of him, and expected no good issue of his sickness, as neither did his friends, and besides the distemper itself, there was a very melancholy circumstance that disordered the king, which was the consideration that he was childless, and was going to die, and leave his house, and his government, without a successor of his own body. So he was troubled at the thoughts of this his condition, and lamented himself, and entreated of God, that he would prolong his life for a little while, till he had some children, and not suffer him to depart this life, before he was become a father. Hereupon God had mercy upon him, and accepted of his supplication, because the trouble he was under at his supposed death was not, because he was soon to leave the advantages he enjoyed in the kingdom, nor did he on that account pray, that he might have a longer life afforded him, but in order to have sons, that might receive the government after him. And God sent Isaiah the prophet, and commanded him to inform Hezekiah that within 3 days' time he should get clear of his distemper, and should survive it 15 years, and that he should have children also. Now, upon the prophet saying this, as God had commanded him, he could hardly believe it, both on account of the distemper he was under, which was very sore, and by reason of the surprising nature of what was told him, so he desired that Isaiah would give him some sign or wonder, that he might believe him in what he had said, and be sensible that he came from God, for things that are beyond expectation, and greater than our hopes, are made credible by actions of the like nature. And when Isaiah had asked him what sign he desired to be exhibited, he desired that he would make the shadow of the sun, which he had already made to go down 10 steps or degrees in his house, to return again to the same place, and to make it as it was before. And when the prophet prayed to God to exhibit this sign to the king, he saw what he desired to see, and was freed from his distemper, and went up to the temple, where he worshipped God, and made vows to him. At this time it was that the dominion of the Assyrians was overthrown by the Medes, but of these things I shall treat elsewhere. But the king of Babylon, whose name was Baladan, sent ambassadors to Hezekiah, with presents, and desired he would be his ally, and his friend. So he received the ambassadors gladly, and made them a feast, and showed them his treasures, and his armory, and the other wealth he was possessed of, in precious stones, and in gold, and gave them presents to be carried to Baladan, and sent them back to him. Upon which the prophet Isaiah came to him, and inquired of him, whence those ambassadors came, to which he replied, that they came from Babylon, from the king, and that he had showed them all he had, that by the sight of his riches and forces he might thereby guess at the plenty he was in and be able to inform the king of it. But the prophet rejoined, and said, know thou, that, after a little while, these riches of thine shall be carried away to Babylon, and thy posterity shall be made eunuchs there, and lose their manhood, and be servants to the king of Babylon, for that God foretold such things would come to pass. Upon which words Hezekiah was troubled, and said that he was himself unwilling that his nation should fall into such calamities, yet since it is not possible to alter what God had determined, he prayed that there might be peace while he lived. Varoses also makes mention of this Baladan, king of Babylon. Now as to this prophet Isaiah, he was by the confession of all a divine and wonderful man, in speaking truth, and out of the assurance that he had never written what was false, he wrote down all his prophecies, and left them behind him in books, that their accomplishments might be judged of from the events by posterity. Nor did this prophet do so alone, but the others, which were 12 in number, did the same. And whatsoever is done among us, whether it be good, or whether it be bad, comes to pass according to their prophecies, but of every one of these we shall speak hereafter. Chapter 3. When King Hezekiah had survived the interval of time already mentioned, and had dwelt all that time in peace, he died, having completed 54 years of his life, and reigned 29. But when his son Manasseh, whose mother's name was Hephzibah, of Jerusalem, had taken the kingdom, he departed from the conduct of his father, and fell into a course of life quite contrary thereto, and showed himself in his manners most wicked in all respects, and omitted no sort of impiety, but imitated those transgressions of the Israelites, by the commission of which against God they had been destroyed, for he was so hardy, as to defile the temple of God, and the city, and the whole country. 4. By setting out from a contempt of God, he barbarously slew all the righteous men that were among the Hebrews, nor would he spare the prophets, for he every day slew some of them, till Jerusalem was overflown with blood. So God was angry at these proceedings, and sent prophets to the king, and to the multitude, by whom he threatened the very same calamities to them which their brethren the Israelites, upon the like affronts offered to God, were now under. But these men would not believe their words, by which belief they might have reaped the advantage of escaping all those miseries, yet did they in earnest learn that what the prophets had told them was true. And when they persevered in the same course of life, God raised up war against them from the king of Babylon and Chaldea, who sent an army against Judea, and laid waste the country, and caught King Manasseh by treachery, and ordered him to be brought to him, and had him under his power, to inflict what punishment he pleased upon him. But then it was that Manasseh perceived what a miserable condition he was in, and esteeming himself the cause of all, he besought God to render his enemy humane and merciful to him. Accordingly, God heard his prayer, and granted him what he prayed for. So Manasseh was released by the king of Babylon, and escaped the danger he was in, and when he was come to Jerusalem, he endeavored, if it were possible, to cast out of his memory those his former sins against God, of which he now repented, and to apply himself to a very religious life. He sanctified the temple, and purged the city, and for the remainder of his days he was intent on nothing, but to return his thanks to God, for his deliverance, and to preserve him propitious to him all his life long. He also instructed the multitude to do the same, as having very nearly experienced what a calamity he was fallen into by a contrary conduct. He also rebuilt the altar, and offered the legal sacrifices, as Moses commanded. And when he had re-established what concerned the divine worship, as it ought to be, he took care of the security of Jerusalem. He did not only repair the old walls with great diligence, but added another wall to the former. He also built very lofty towers, and the garrison places, before the city he strengthened, not only in other respects, but with provisions of all sorts, that they wanted. And indeed, when he had changed his former course, he so led his life for the time to come, that from the time of his return to piety towards God he was deemed a happy man, and a pattern for imitation. When therefore he had lived 67 years, he departed this life, having reigned 55 years, and was buried in his own garden, and the kingdom came to his son Amon, whose mother's name was Meshulemeth, of the city of Jotbath. Chapter 4. This Amon imitated those works of his father which he insolently did when he was young, so he had a conspiracy made against him by his own servants, and was slain in his own house, when he had lived 24 years, and of them had reigned 2. But the multitude punished those that slew Amon, and buried him with his father, and gave the kingdom to his son Josiah, who was 8 years old. His mother was of the city of Bozkath, and her name was Jedidah. He was of a most excellent disposition, and naturally virtuous, and followed the actions of King David, as a pattern, and a rule to him in the whole conduct of his life. And when he was 12 years old, he gave demonstrations of his religious and righteous behavior, for he brought the people to a sober way of living, and exhorted them to leave off the opinion they had of their idols, because they were not gods, but to worship their own God. And by repeating on the actions of his progenitors, he prudently corrected what they did wrong, like a very elderly man, and like one abundantly able to understand what was fit to be done, and what he found they had well done, he observed all the country over, and imitated the same. and thus he acted in following the wisdom and sagacity of his own nature, and in compliance with the advice and instruction of the elders, for by following the laws it was that he succeeded so well in the order of his government, and in piety with regard to the divine worship. And this happened, because the transgressions of the former kings were seen no more, but quite vanished away, for the king went about the city, and the whole country, and cut down the groves which were devoted to strange gods, and overthrew their altars, and if there were any gifts dedicated to them by his forefathers, he made them ignominious, and plucked them down, and by this means he brought the people back from their opinion about them to the worship of God. He also offered his accustomed sacrifices, and burnt offerings upon the altar. Moreover, he ordained certain judges and overseers, that they might order the matters to them severally belonging, and have regard to justice, above all things, and distribute it with the same concern they would have about their own soul. He also sent over all the country, and desired such as pleased to bring gold and silver for the repairs of the temple, according to every one's inclinations and abilities. And when the money was brought in, he made one Maaseiah the governor of the city, and Shaphan the scribe, and Joab the recorder, and Eliakim the high priest, curators of the temple, and of the charges contributed thereto, who made no delay, nor put the work off at all, but prepared architects, and whatsoever was proper for those repairs, and sat closely about the work. So the temple was repaired by this means, and became a public demonstration of the king's piety. But when he was now in the 18th year of his reign, he sent to Eliakim the high priest, and gave order, that out of what money was overplus, he should cast cups, and dishes, and vials, for ministration in the temple, and besides, that they should bring all the gold or silver which was among the treasures, and expend that also in making cups, and the like vessels. But as the high priest was bringing out the gold, he lighted upon the holy books of Moses that were laid up in the temple, and when he had brought them out, he gave them to Shaphan the scribe, who, when he had read them, came to the king, and informed him that all was finished which he had ordered to be done. He also read over the books to him, who, when he had heard them read, rent his garment, and called for Eliakim the high priest, and for Shaphan the scribe, and for certain other of his most particular friends, and sent them to Huldah the prophetess, the wife of Shallum, which Shallum was a man of dignity, and of an eminent family, and bid them go to her, and say that he desired she would appease God, and endeavor to render him propitious to them, for that there was cause to fear, lest, upon the transgression of the laws of Moses, by their forefathers, they should be in peril of going into captivity, and of being cast out of their own country, lest they should be in want of all things, and so end their days miserably. When the prophetess had heard this from the messengers, that were sent to her by the king, she bid them go back to the king, and say that God had already given sentence against them, to destroy the people, and cast them out of their country, and deprive them of all the happiness they enjoyed, which sentence none could set aside by any prayers of theirs, since it was passed on account of their transgressions of the laws, and of their not having repented in so long a time. While the prophets had exhorted them to amend, and had foretold the punishment that would ensue on their impious practices, which threatening God would certainly execute upon them, that they might be persuaded that he is God, and had not deceived them in any respect, as to what he had denounced by his prophets, that yet, because Josiah was a righteous man, he would at present delay those calamities, but that after his death he would send on a multitude what miseries he had determined for them. So these messengers, upon this prophecy of the woman, came, and told it to the king, whereupon he sent to the people everywhere, and ordered that the priests and the Levites should come together to Jerusalem, and commanded that those of every age should be present also. And when they had gathered together, he first read to them the holy books, after which he stood upon a pulpit, in the midst of the multitude, and obliged them to make a covenant, with an oath, that they would worship God, and keep the laws of Moses. Accordingly, they gave their assent willingly, and undertook to do what the king had recommended to them. So they immediately offered sacrifices, and that after an acceptable manner, and besought God to be gracious and merciful to them. He also enjoined the high priest that if there remained in the temple any vessel that was dedicated to idols or to foreign gods, they should cast it out. So when a great number of such vessels were got together, he burnt them and scattered their ashes abroad, and slew the priests of the idols that were not of the family of Aaron. And when he had done thus in Jerusalem, he came into the country and utterly destroyed what buildings had been made therein by King Jeroboam, in honor of strange gods, and he burnt the bones of the false prophets upon that altar which Jeroboam first built. And, as the prophet Jadon, who came to Jeroboam, when he was offering sacrifice, and when all the people heard him, foretold what would come to pass, viz. That a certain man of the house of David, Josiah by name, should do what is here mentioned. And it happened that those predictions took effect after 361 years. After these things, Josiah went also to such other Israelites as had escaped captivity and slavery under the Assyrians, and persuaded them to desist from their impious practices, and to leave off the honors they paid to strange gods, but to worship rightly their own Almighty God, and adhere to Him. He also searched the houses, and the villages, and the cities, out of a suspicion that somebody might have one idol or other in private, nay, indeed, he took away the chariots of the sun that were set up in his royal palace, which his predecessors had framed, and what thing soever there was besides which they worshipped, as a god. And when he had thus purged all the country, he called the people to Jerusalem, and there celebrated the feast of unleavened bread, and that called the Passover. He also gave the people 4 paschal sacrifices, young kids of the goats and lambs, 30,000, and 3,000 oxen, 4 burnt offerings. The principal of the priests also gave to the priests against the Passover 2,600 lambs. The principal of the Levites also gave to the Levites 5,000 lambs, and 500 oxen, by which means there was great plenty of sacrifices, and they offered those sacrifices according to the laws of Moses, while every priest explained the matter, and ministered to the multitude. And indeed there had been no other festival thus celebrated by the Hebrews, from the times of Samuel the prophet, and the plenty of sacrifices now was the occasion, that all things were performed according to the laws, and according to the custom of their forefathers. So when Josiah had after this lived in peace, nay, in riches and reputation also, among all men, he ended his life, in the manner following. Chapter 5. Now Necho, king of Egypt, raised an army, and marched to the river Euphrates, in order to fight with the Medes and Babylonians, who had overthrown the dominion of the Assyrians, 8, for he had a desire to reign over Asia. Now when he was come to the city Mendes, which belonged to the kingdom of Josiah, he brought an army to hinder him from passing through his own country, in his expedition against the Medes. Now Necho sent a herald to Josiah, and told him that he did not make this expedition against him, but was making haste to Euphrates, and desired that he would not provoke him to fight against him, because he obstructed his march to the place whither he had resolved to go. But Josiah did not admit of this advice of Necho, but put himself into a posture to hinder him from his intended march. I suppose it was fate that pushed him on this conduct, that it might take an occasion against him, for, as he was setting his army in array, and rode about in his chariot, from one wing of his army to another, one of the Egyptians shot an arrow at him, and put an end to his eagerness of fighting, for being sorely wounded, he commanded a retreat to be sounded for his army, and returned to Jerusalem, and died of that wound, and was magnificently buried in the sepulchre of his fathers, when he had lived 39 years, and of them had reigned 31. But all the people mourned greatly for him, lamenting, and grieving on his account many days, and Jeremiah the prophet composed an elegy to lament him, which is extant till Till's time also. Moreover, this prophet announced beforehand the sad calamities that were coming upon the city. He also left behind him in writing a description of that destruction of our nation which has lately happened in our days, and the taking of Babylon, nor was he the only prophet who delivered such predictions beforehand to the multitude, but so did Ezekiel also, who was the first person that wrote and left behind him in writing two books concerning these events. Now these two prophets were priests by birth, but of them Jeremiah dwelt in Jerusalem, from the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, until the city and temple were utterly destroyed. However, as to what befell this prophet, we will relate it in its proper place. Upon the death of Josiah, which we have already mentioned, his son, Jehoahaz by name, took the kingdom, being about 23 years old. He reigned in Jerusalem, and his mother was Hamutal, of the city Libnah. He was an impious man, and impure in his course of life, but, as the king of Egypt returned from the battle, he sent for Jehoahaz to come to him, to the city called Hamath which belongs to Syria, and when he was come, he put him in bands, and delivered the kingdom to a brother of his, by the father's side, whose name was Eliakim, and changed his name to Jehoiakim, and laid a tribute upon the land of 100 talents of silver, and 1 talent of gold. And the sum of money Jehoiakim paid by way of tribute, but Necho carried away Jehoahaz into Egypt, where he died when he had reigned 3 months and 10 days. Now Jehoiakim's mother was called Zebudah, of the city Ramah. He was of a wicked disposition, and ready to do mischief, nor was he either religious towards God, or good-natured towards men. Chapter 6. Now in the 4th year of the reign of Jehoiakim, one whose name was Nebuchadnezzar took the government over the Babylonians, who at the same time went up with a great army, to the city Carchemish, which was at Euphrates, upon a resolution he had taken to fight with Necho king of Egypt, under whom all Syria then was. And when Necho understood the intention of the king of Babylon, and that this expedition was made against him, he did not despise his attempt, but made haste with a great band of men to Euphrates, to defend himself from Nebuchadnezzar. And when they had joined battle, he was beaten, and lost many 10,000s of his soldiers in the battle. So the king of Babylon passed over Euphrates, and took all Syria, as far as Pelusium, excepting Judea. But when Nebuchadnezzar had already reigned 4 years, which was the 8th of Jehoiakim's government, over the Hebrews, the king of Babylon made an expedition with mighty forces against the Jews, and required tribute of Jehoiakim, and threatened upon his refusal to make war against him. He was affrighted at his threatening, and bought his peace with money, and brought the tribute he was ordered to bring for 3 years. But on the 3rd year, upon hearing that the king of the Babylonians made an expedition against the Egyptians, he did not pay his tribute, yet was he disappointed of his hope, for the Egyptians durst not fight at this time. And indeed the prophet Jeremiah foretold every day, how vainly they relied on their hopes from Egypt, and how the city would be overthrown by the king of Babylon, and Jehoiakim the king would be subdued by him. But what he thus spake proved to be of no advantage to them, because there were none that should escape, for both the multitude and the rulers, when they heard him, had no concern about what they heard, but being displeased at what was said, as if the prophet were a diviner against the king, they accused Jeremiah, and bringing him before the court, they required that a sentence and a punishment might be given against him. Now all the rest gave their votes for his condemnation, but the elders refused, who prudently sent away the prophet from the court of the prison, and persuaded the rest to do Jeremiah no harm, for they said that he was not the only person who foretold what would come to the city, but that Micah signified the same before him, as well as many others, none of which suffered anything of the kings that then reigned, but were honored as the prophets of God. So they mollified the multitude with these words, and delivered Jeremiah from the punishment to which he was condemned. Now when this prophet had written all his prophecies, and the people were fasting, and assembled at the temple, on the 9th month of the 5th year of Jehoiakim, he read the book he had composed of his predictions of what was to befall the city, and the temple, and the multitude. And when the rulers heard of it, they took the book from him, and bid him and Baruch the scribe to go their ways, lest they should be discovered by one or other. But they carried the book, and gave it to the king. So he gave order, in the presence of his friends, that his scribe should take it, and read it. When the king heard what it contained, he was angry, and tore it, and cast it into the fire, where it was consumed. He also commanded that they should seek for Jeremiah, and Baruch the scribe, and bring them to him, that they might be punished. However, they escaped his anger. Now, a little time afterwards, the king of Babylon made an expedition against Jehoiakim, whom he received into the city, and this out of fear of the foregoing predictions of this prophet, as supposing he should suffer nothing. That was terrible, because he neither shut the gates, nor fought against him, yet when he was come into the city, he did not observe the covenants he had made, but he slew such as were in the flower of their age, and such as were of the greatest dignity, together with their king Jehoiakim, whom he commanded to be thrown before the walls, without any burial, and made his son Jehoashin king of the country, and of the city. He also took the principal persons in dignity for captives, 3,000, in number, and led them away to Babylon, among which was the prophet Ezekiel, who was then but young. And this was the end of King Jehoiakim, when he had lived 36 years, and of them reigned 11. But Jehoashin succeeded him in the kingdom, whose mother's name was Nehushta, she was a citizen of Jerusalem. He reigned 3 months and 10 days. Chapter 7. But a terror seized on the king of Babylon, who had given the kingdom to Jehoashin, and that immediately he was afraid that he should bear him a grudge, because of his killing his father, and thereupon should make the country revolt from him, wherefore he sent an army, and besieged Jehoashin in Jerusalem. But, because he was of a gentle and just disposition, he did not desire to see the city endangered on his account, but he took his mother and kindred, and delivered them to the commanders sent by the king of Babylon, and accepted of their oaths, that neither should they suffer any harm, nor the city, which agreement they did not observe for a single year, for the king of Babylon did not keep it, but gave orders to his generals to take all that were in the city captives, both the youth and the handicraftsmen, and bring them bound to him. Their number was 10,832, as also Jehoashin, and his mother and friends. And when these were brought to him, he kept them in custody, and appointed Jehoashin's uncle, Zedekiah, to be king, and made him take an oath that he would certainly keep the kingdom for him, and make no innovation, nor have any league of friendship with the Egyptians. Now Zedekiah was 21 years old when he took the government, and had the same mother with his brother Jehoiakim, but was a despiser of justice, and of his duty, for truly those of the same age with him were wicked about him, and the whole multitude did what unjust and insolent things they pleased, for which reason the prophet Jeremiah came often to him, and protested to him, and insisted that he must leave off his impieties and transgressions, and take care of what was right, and neither give ear to the rulers, among whom were wicked men, nor give credit to their false prophets, who deluded them, as if the king of Babylon would make no more war against them, and as if the Egyptians would make war against him, and conquer him, since what they said was not true, and the events would not prove such as they expected. Now as to Zedekiah himself, while he heard the prophet speak, he believed him, and agreed to everything as true, and supposed it was for his advantage. But then his friends perverted him, and dissuaded him from what the prophet advised, and obliged him to do what they pleased. Ezekiel also foretold in Babylon what calamities were coming upon the people, which when he heard, he sent accounts of them unto Jerusalem. But Zedekiah did not believe their prophecies, for the reason following: it happened that the two prophets agreed with one another in what they said, as in all other things, that the city should be taken, and Zedekiah himself should be taken captive. But Ezekiel disagreed with him, and said that Zedekiah should not see Babylon, while Jeremiah said to him that the king of Babylon should carry him away thither in bonds. And be now when Zedekiah had preserved the league of mutual assistance he had made with the Babylonians for 8 years, he brake it, and revolted to the Egyptians, in hopes, by their assistance, of overcoming the Babylonians. When the king of Babylon knew this, he made war against him, he laid his country waste, and took his fortified towns, and came to the city Jerusalem itself to besiege it. But when the king of Egypt heard what circumstances Zedekiah his ally was in, he took a great army with him, and came into Judea, as if he would raise the siege, upon which the king of Babylon departed from Jerusalem, and met the Egyptians, and joined battle with them, and beat them, and when he had put them to flight, he pursued them, and drove them out of all Syria. Now as soon as the king of Babylon was departed from Jerusalem, the false prophets deceived Zedekiah, and said that the king of Babylon would not any more make war against him or his people, nor remove them out of their own country into Babylon, and that those then in captivity would return, with all those vessels of the temple of which the king of Babylon had despoiled that temple. But Jeremiah came among them, and prophesied what contradicted those predictions, and what proved to be true, that they did ill, and deluded the king, that the Egyptians would be of no advantage to them, but that the king of Babylon would renew the war against Jerusalem, and besiege it again, and would destroy the people by famine, and carry away those that remained into captivity, and would take away what they had as spoils, and would carry off those riches that were in the temple, nay, that, besides this, he would burn it, and utterly overthrow the city, and that they should serve him and his posterity 70 years. That then the Persians and the Medes should put an end to their servitude, and overthrow the Babylonians, and that we shall be dismissed, and return to this land, and rebuild the temple, and restore Jerusalem. When Jeremiah said this, the greater part believed him, but the rulers, and those that were wicked, despised him, as one disordered in his senses. Now he had resolved to go elsewhere, to his own country, which was called Anathoth, and was 20 furlongs distant from Jerusalem. And, as he was going, one of the rulers met him, and seized upon him, and accused him falsely, as though he were going, as a deserter to the Babylonians. But Jeremiah said, that he accused him falsely, and added, that he was only going to his own country. But the other would not believe him, but seized upon him, and led him away to the rulers, and laid an accusation against him, under whom he endured all sorts of torments, and tortures, and was reserved to be punished. And this was the condition he was in for some time, while he suffered what I have already described unjustly. Now in the 9th year of the reign of Zedekiah, on the 10th day of the 10th month, the king of Babylon made a second expedition against Jerusalim, and lay before it 18 months, and besieged it with the utmost application. There came upon them also 2 of the greatest calamities at the same time that Jerusalem was besieged, a famine, and a pestilential distemper, and made great havoc of them. And though the prophet Jeremiah was in prison, he did not rest, but cried out, and proclaimed aloud, and exhorted the multitude to open their gates, and admit the king of Babylon, for that if they did so, they should be preserved, and their whole families, but if they did not so, they should be destroyed. And he foretold, that if anyone stayed in the city, he should certainly perish by one of these ways, either be consumed by the famine, or slain by the enemy's sword. But that if he would flee to the enemy, he should escape death. Yet did not these rulers who heard believe him, even when they were in the midst of their sore calamities, but they came to the king, and in their anger informed him what Jeremiah had said, and accused him, and complained of the prophet, as of a madman, and one that disheartened their minds, and by the denunciation of miseries weakened the alacrity of the multitude, who were otherwise ready to expose themselves to dangers for him, and for their country, while he, in a way of threatening, warned them to flee to the enemy, and told them that the city should certainly be taken, and be utterly destroyed. But for the king himself, he was not at all irritated against Jeremiah, Such was his gentle and righteous disposition, yet, that he might not be engaged in a quarrel with those rulers at such a time, by opposing what they intended, he let them do with the prophet whatsoever they would, whereupon, when the king had granted them such a permission, they presently came into the prison, and took him, and let him down with the cord into a pit full of mire, that he might be suffocated, and die of himself. So he stood up to the neck in the mire which was all about him, and so continued. But there was one of the king's servants, who was in esteem with him, an Ethiopian by descent, who told the king what estate the prophet was in, and said that his friends, and his rulers had done evil in putting the prophet into the mire, and by that means contriving against him that he should suffer a death more bitter than that by his bonds only. When the king heard this, he repented of his having delivered up the prophet to the rulers, and bid the Ethiopian take 30 men of the king's guards, and cords with them, and whatsoever else they understood to be necessary for the prophet's preservation, and to draw him up immediately. So the Ethiopian took the men he was ordered to take, and drew up the prophet out of the mire, and left him at liberty in the prison. But when the king had sent to call him privately, and inquired what he could say to him from God, which might be suitable to his present circumstances, and desired him to inform him of it, Jeremiah replied, that he had somewhat to say, but he said withal, he should not be believed, nor, if he admonished them, should be hearkened to, for, said he, thy friends have determined to destroy me, as though I had been guilty of some wickedness. And where are now those men, who deceived us? And said, that the king of Babylon would not come, and fight against us any more. But I am afraid now to speak the truth, lest thou shouldst condemn me to die. And when the king had assured him upon oath, that he would neither himself put him to death, nor deliver him up to the rulers, he became bold upon that assurance that was given him, and gave him this advice, that he should deliver the city up to the Babylonians, and he said that it was God who prophesied this by him, that he must do so if he would be preserved, and escape out of the danger he was in, and that then, neither should the city fall to the ground, nor should the temple be burned, but that if he disobeyed he would be the cause of these miseries coming upon the citizens, and of the calamity that would befall his whole house. When the king heard this, he said that he would willingly do what he persuaded him to, and what he declared would be to his advantage, but that he was afraid of those of his own country, that had fallen away to the Babylonians, lest he should be accused by them to the king of Babylon, and be punished. But the prophet encouraged him, and said he had no cause to fear such punishment, for that he should not have the experience of any misfortune, if he would deliver all up to the Babylonians, neither himself, nor his children, nor his wives, and that the temple should then continue unhurt. So when Jeremiah had said this, the king let him go, and charged him to betray what they had resolved on to none of the citizens, nor to tell any of these matters to any of the rulers, if they should have learned that he had been sent for, and should inquire of him what it was that he was sent for, and what he had said to him, but to pretend to them that he besought him that he might not be kept in bonds, and in prison. And indeed he said so to them, for they came to the prophet, and asked him what advice it was that he came to give the king relating to them. And thus I have finished what concerns this matter. Chapter 8. Now the king of Babylon was very intent and earnest upon the siege of Jerusalem, and he erected towers upon great banks of earth, and from them repelled those that stood upon the walls. He also made a great number of such banks round about the whole city, whose height was equal to those walls. However, those that were within bore the siege with courage and alacrity, for they were not discouraged either by the famine or by the pestilential distemper, but were of cheerful minds, in the prosecution of the war, although those miseries within oppressed them also, and they did not suffer themselves to be terrified, either by the contrivances of the enemy, or by their engines of war, but contrived still different engines, to oppose all the other withal. Till indeed there seemed to be an entire struggle, between the Babylonians, and the people of Jerusalem, which had the greater sagacity and skill, the former part be supposing they should be thereby too hard for the other, for the destruction of the city, the latter placing their hopes of deliverance in nothing else but in persevering in such inventions in opposition to the other, as might demonstrate the enemy's engines were useless to them. And this siege they endured for 18 months, until they were destroyed by the famine, and by the darts which the enemy threw at them from the towers. Now the city was taken on the 9th day of the 4th month, in the 11th year of the reign of Zedekiah. They were indeed only generals of the king of Babylon, to whom Nebuchadnezzar committed the care of the siege, for he abode himself in the city of Riblah. The names of these generals who ravaged and subdued Jerusalem, if any one desire to know them, were these: Nergal-Sharezer, Samgarnebo, Rabsaris, Sorzechim, and Rabmag. And when the city was taken about midnight, and the enemy's generals were entered into the temple, and when Zedekiah was sensible of it, he took his wives, and his children, and his captains, and his friends, and with them fled out of the city, through the fortified ditch, and through the desert. And when certain of the deserters had informed the Babylonians of this, at break of day, they made haste to pursue after Zedekiah, and overtook him not far from Jericho, and encompassed him about. But for those friends and captains of Zedekiah who had fled out of the city with him, when they saw their enemies near them, they left him, and dispersed themselves, some one way, and some another, and every one resolved to save himself. So the enemy took Zedekiah alive, when he was deserted by all but a few, with his children, and his wives, and brought him to the king. When he was come, Nebuchadnezzar began to call him a wicked wretch, and a covenant breaker, and one that had forgotten his former words, when he promised to keep the country for him. He also reproached him for his ingratitude, that when he had received the kingdom from him, who had taken it from Ishawashan, and given it to him, he had made use of the power he gave him against him that gave it. But, said he, God is great, who hated that conduct of thine, and hath brought thee under us. And, when he had used these words to Zedekiah, he commanded his sons, and his friends, to be slain, while Zedekiah and the rest of the captains looked on. After which he put out the eyes of Zedekiah, and bound him, and carried him to Babylon. And these things happened to him, as Jeremiah and Ezekiel had foretold to him, that he should be caught, and brought before the king of Babylon, and should speak to him face to face, and should see his eyes with his own eyes. And thus far did Jeremiah prophesy. But he was also made blind, and brought to Babylon, but did not see it, according to the prediction of Ezekiel. We have said thus much, because it was sufficient to show the nature of God to such as are ignorant of it, that it is various, and acts many different ways, and that all events happen after a regular manner, in their proper season, and that it foretells what must come to pass. It is also sufficient to show the ignorance and incredulity of men, whereby they are not permitted to foresee anything that is future, and are, without any guard, exposed to calamities, so that it is impossible for them to avoid the experience of those calamities. And after this manner have the kings of David's race ended their lives, being in number 21, until the last king, who altogether reigned 514 years, and 6 months, and 10 days, of whom Saul, who was their first king, retained the government 20 years, though he was not of the same tribe with the rest. And now it was that the king of Babylon sent Nebuzaradan, the general of his army, to Jerusalem, to pillage the temple, who had it also in command to burn it, and the royal palace, and to lay the city even with the ground, and to transplant the people into Babylon. Accordingly, he came to Jerusalem in the 11th year of King Zedekiah, and pillaged the temple, and carried out the vessels of God, both gold and silver, and particularly that large laver which Solomon dedicated, as also the pillars of brass, and their chapiters, with the golden tables, and the candlesticks. And when he had carried these off, he set fire to the temple in the 5th month, the 1st day of the month, in the 11th year of the reign of Zedekiah, and in the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar. He also burnt the palace, and overthrew the city. Now the temple was burnt 470 years, 6 months, and 10 days, after it was built, It was then 1,062 years, 6 months, and 10 days, from the departure out of Egypt, and from the deluge to the destruction of the temple. The whole interval was 1,957 years, 6 months, and 10 days, but from the generation of Adam, until this befell the temple, there were 3,513 years, 6 months, and 10 days, so great was the number of years hereto belonging. And what actions were done during these years we have particularly related. But the general of the Babylonian king now overthrew the city to the very foundations, and removed all the people, and took for prisoners the high priest Seraiah, and Zephaniah the priest that was next to him, and the rulers that guarded the temple, who were three in number, and the eunuch who was over the armed men, and 7 friends of Zedekiah, and his scribe, and 60 other rulers, all which, together with the vessels which they had pillaged, he carried to the king of Babylon to Riblah, a city of Syria. So the king commanded the heads of the high priest, and of the rulers to be cut off there, but he himself led all the captives and Zedekiah to Babylon. He also led Josedech the high priest away bound. He was the son of Seraiah the high priest, whom the king of Babylon had slain in Riblah, a city of Syria, as we just now related. And now, because we have enumerated the succession of the kings, and who they were, and how long they reigned, I think it necessary to set down the names of the high priests, and who they were that succeeded one another in the high priesthood, under the kings. The first high priest then at the temple which Solomon built was Zadok, after him his son Achimus received that dignity, after Achimus was Azarias, his son was Joram, and Joram's son was Esus, after him was Axiogramus, his son was Phidens, and Phides' son was Sudeas, and Sudeas' son was Waelus, and Waelus's son was Jotham, and Jotham's son was Urias, and Urias's son was Nereus, and Nereus's son was Odes, and his son was Salumas, and Salumas's son was Elchias, and his son was Azarias, and his son was Sarias, and his son was Hosedech, who was carried captive to Babylon. All these received the high priesthood by succession, the sons from their father. When the king was come to Babylon, he kept Zedekiah in prison, until he died, and buried him magnificently, and dedicated the vessels he had pillaged out of the temple of Jerusalem, to his own gods, and planted the people in the country of Babylon, but freed the high priest from his bonds. Chapter 9. Now the general of the army, Nebuzaradan, when he had carried the people of the Jews into captivity, left the poor, and those that had deserted, in the country, and made one, whose name was Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, a person of a noble family, their governor, which Gedaliah was of a gentle and righteous disposition. He also commanded them that they should cultivate the ground, and pay an appointed tribute to the king. He also took Jeremiah the prophet out of prison, and would have persuaded him to go along with him to Babylon, for that he had been enjoined by the king to supply him with whatsoever he wanted, and if he did not like to do so, he desired him to inform him where he resolved to dwell, that he might signify the same to the king. But the prophet had no mind to follow him, nor to dwell anywhere else, but would gladly live in the ruins of his country, and in the miserable remains of it. When the general understood what his purpose was, he enjoined Gedaliah, whom he left behind, to take all possible care of him, and to supply him with whatsoever he wanted. So when he had given him rich presents, he dismissed him. Accordingly, Jeremiah abode in a city of that country, which was called Mizpah, and desired of Nebuzaradan that he would set at liberty his disciple Baruch, the son of Neriah, one of a very eminent family, and exceeding skillful in the language of his country. When Nebuzaradan had done thus, he made haste to Babylon. But as to those that fled away during the siege of Jerusalem, and had been scattered over the country, when they heard that the Babylonians were gone away, and had left a remnant in the land of Jerusalem, and those such as were to cultivate the same, they came together from all parts to Gedaliah to Mizpah. Now the rulers that were over them were Johanan, the son of Kareah, and Jazaniah, and Sariah, and others beside them. Now there was of the royal family one Ishmael, a wicked man, and very crafty, who, during the siege of Jerusalem, fled to Balas, the king of the Ammonites, and abode with him during that time, and Gedaliah persuaded them, now they were there, to stay with him, and to have no fear of the Babylonians, for that if they would cultivate the country, they should suffer no harm. This he assured them of by oath, and said that they should have him for their patron, and that if any disturbance should arise, they should find him ready to defend them. He also advised them to dwell in any city, as every one of them pleased, and that they would send men along with his own servants, and rebuild their houses upon the old foundations, and dwell there, and he admonished them beforehand, that they should make preparation, while the season lasted, of corn, and wine, and oil, that they might have whereon to feed during the winter. When he had thus discoursed to them, he dismissed them, that every one might dwell in what place of the country he pleased. Now when this report was spread abroad as far as the nations that bordered on Judea, that Gedaliah kindly entertained those that came to him, after they had fled away, upon this only condition, that they should pay tribute to the king of Babylon, they also came readily to Gedaliah, and inhabited the country. And when Johanan, and the rulers that were with him, observed the country, and the humanity of Gedaliah, they were exceedingly in love with him, and told him, that Balas, the king of the Ammonites, had sent Ishmael, to kill him by treachery, and secretly, that he might have the dominion over the Israelites, as being of the royal family, and they said that he might deliver himself from this treacherous design, if he would give them leave to slay Ishmael, and nobody should know it. For they told him they were afraid that, when he was killed by the other, the entire ruin of the remaining strength of the Israelites would ensue. But he professed that he did not believe what they said, when they told him of such a treacherous design, in a man that had been well treated by him, because it was not probable that one, who, under such a want of all things, had failed of nothing that was necessary for him, should be found so wicked and ungrateful towards his benefactor, that when it would be an instance of wickedness in him not to save him, had he been treacherously assaulted by others, to endeavor, and that earnestly, to kill him with his own hands, that, however, if he ought to suppose this information to be true, it was better for himself to be slain by the other, than to destroy a man, who fled to him for refuge, and entrusted his own safety to him, and committed himself to his disposal. So Johanan, and the rulers that were with him, not being able to persuade Gedaliah, went away. But after the interval of 30 days was over, Ishmael came again to Gedaliah, to the city Mizpah, and 10 men with him, and when he had feasted Ishmael, and those that were with him, in a splendid manner at his table, and had given them presents, he became disordered in drink, while he endeavored to be very merry with them, and when Ishmael saw him in that case, and that he was drowned in his cups, to the degree of insensibility, and fallen asleep, he rose up on a sudden, with his 10 friends, and slew Gedaliah, and those that were with him at the feast, and when he had slain them, he went out by night, and slew all the Jews that were in the city, and those soldiers also which were left therein by the Babylonians. But the next day 80 men came out of the country with presents to Gedaliah, none of them knowing what had befallen him. When Ishmael saw them, he invited them into Gedaliah, and when they were come in, he shut up the court, and slew them, and cast their dead bodies down into a certain deep pit, that they might not be seen. But of these 80 men Ishmael spared those that entreated him not to kill them, till they had delivered up to him what riches they had concealed in the fields, consisting of their furniture, and garments, and corn. But he took captive the people that were in Mizpah, with their wives and children, among whom were the daughters of King Zedekiah, whom Nebuzaradan, the general of the army of Babylon, had left with Gedaliah. And when he had done this, he came to the king of the Ammonites. But when Johanan and the rulers with him heard of what was done at Mizpah by Ishmael, and of the death of Gedaliah, they had indignation at it, and every one of them took his own armed men, and came suddenly to fight with Ishmael, and overtook him at the fountain in Hebron. And when those that were carried away captives by Ishmael saw Johanan, and the rulers, they were very glad, and looked upon them as coming to their assistance, so they left him, that had carried them captives, and came over to Johanan. Then Ishmael, with 8 men, fled to the king of the Ammonites, but Johanan took those whom he had rescued out of the hands of Ishmael, and the eunuchs, and their wives and children, and came to a certain place called Mandra, and there they abode that day. For they had determined to remove from thence and go into Egypt, out of fear, lest the Babylonians should slay them, in case they continued in the country, and that out of anger at the slaughter of Gedaliah, who had been by them set over it for governor. Now while they were under this deliberation, Johanan, the son of Kareah, and the rulers that were with him, came to Jeremiah the prophet, and desired that he would pray to God, that, because they were at an utter loss about what they ought to do, he would discover it to them, and they swear, that they would do whatsoever Jeremiah should say to them. And when the prophet said he would be their intercessor with God, it came to pass, that after 10 days God appeared to him, and said that he should inform Johanan, and the other rulers, and all the people, that he would be with them while they continued in that country, and take care of them, and keep them from being hurt by the Babylonians, of whom they were afraid, but that he would desert them if they went into Egypt, and, out of this wrath against them, would inflict the same punishments upon them which they knew their brethren had already endured. So when the prophet had informed Johanan, and the people, that God had foretold these things, he was not believed, when he said that God commanded them to continue in the country, but they imagined that he said so to gratify Baruch, his own disciple, and belied God, and that he persuaded them to stay there, that they might be destroyed by the Babylonians. Accordingly, both the people and Johanan disobeyed the counsel of God, which he gave them by the prophet, and removed into Egypt, and carried Jeremiah and Barnach along with him. And when they were there, God signified to the prophet that the king of Babylon was about making an expedition against the Egyptians, and commanded him to foretell to the people that Egypt should be taken, and the king of Babylon should slay some of them and should take others captive, and bring them to Babylon, which things came to pass accordingly, for on the 5th year after the destruction of Jerusalem, which was the 23rd of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, he made an expedition against Celesyria. And when he had possessed himself of it, he made war against the Ammonites and Moabites, and when he had brought all these nations under subjection, he fell upon Egypt, in order to overthrow it, and he slew the king that then reigned and set up another, and he took those Jews that were their captives, and led them away to Babylon. And such was the end of the nation of the Hebrews, as it hath been delivered down to us, it having twice gone beyond Euphrates, for the people of the 10 tribes were carried out of Samaria, by the Assyrians, in the days of King Hoshea, after which the people of the 2 tribes that remained after Jerusalem was taken were carried away by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon and Chaldea. Now as to Shalmaneser, he removed the Israelites out of their country, and placed there in the nation of the Cuthans, who had formerly belonged to the inner parts of Persia and Media, but were then called Samaritans, by taking the name of the country to which they were removed. But the king of Babylon, who brought out the 2 tribes, placed no other nation in their country, by which means all Judea and Jerusalem, and the temple, continued to be a desert for 70 years. But the entire interval of time which passed from the captivity of the Israelites to the carrying away of the 2 tribes proved to be 130 years, 6 months, and 10 days. Chapter 10. But now Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, took some of the most noble of the Jews, that were children, and the kinsmen of Zedekiah their king, such as were remarkable for the beauty of their bodies, and the comeliness of their countenances, and delivered them into the hands of tutors, and to the improvement to be made by them. He also made some of them to be eunuchs, which course he took also with those of other nations, whom he had taken in the flower of their age, and afforded them their diet from his own table, and had them instructed in the institutes of the country, and taught the learning of the Chaldeans, and they had now exercised themselves sufficiently in that wisdom which he had ordered they should apply themselves to. Now among these there were four of the family of Zedekiah, of most excellent dispositions, one of whom was called Daniel, another was called Ananias, another Mishael, and the fourth Azarias, and the king of Babylon changed their names, and commanded that they should make use of other names. Daniel he called Balthasar, Ananias, Shadrach, Mishael, Meshach, and Azarias, Abednego. These the king had in esteem, and continued to love, because of the very excellent temper they were of, and, because of their application to learning, and the profess they had made in wisdom. Now Daniel and his kinsmen had resolved to use a severe diet, and to abstain from those kinds of food which came from the king's table, and entirely to forbear to eat of all living creatures. So he came to Ashpenaz, who was that eunuch to whom the care of them was committed, and desired him to take and spend what was brought for them from the king, but to give them pulse and dates for their food, and anything else, besides the flesh of living creatures, that he pleased, for that their inclinations were to that sort of food, and that they despised the other. He replied, that he was ready to serve them in what they desired, but he suspected that they would be discovered by the king, from their meager bodies, and the alteration of their countenances, because it could not be avoided, but their bodies and colors must be changed with their diet, especially while they would be clearly discovered by the finer appearance of the other children, who would fare better, and thus they should bring him into danger, and occasion him to be punished. Yet did they persuade Arioch, who was thus fearful, to give them what food they desired for 10 days, by way of trial, and in case the habit of their bodies were not altered, to go on in the same way, as expecting that they should not be hurt thereby afterwards, but if he saw them look meager, and worse than the rest, he should reduce them to their former diet. Now when it appeared that they were so far from becoming worse by the use of this food, that they grew plumper, and fuller in body, and the rest, insomuch that he thought those who fed on what came from the king's table seemed less plump and full, while those that were with Daniel looked, as if they had lived in plenty, and in all sorts of luxury. Arioch, from that time, securely took himself what the king sent every day from his supper, according to custom, to the children, but gave them the forementioned diet, while they had their souls, in some measure more pure, and less burdened, and so fitter for learning, and had their bodies in better tune for hard labor, for they neither had the former oppressed and heavy with variety of meats, nor were the other effeminate on the same account, so they readily understood all the learning that was among the Hebrews, and among the Chaldeans, as especially did Daniel, who being already sufficiently skillful in wisdom, was very busy about the interpretation of dreams, and God manifested himself to him. Now 2 years after the destruction of Egypt, King Nebuchadnezzar saw a wonderful dream, the accomplishment of which God showed him in his sleep, but when he arose out of his bed, he forgot the accomplishment. So he sent for the Chaldeans and magicians, and the prophets, and told them that he had seen a dream, and informed them that he had forgotten the accomplishment of what he had seen, and he enjoined them to tell him both what the dream was, and what was its signification, and they said that this was a thing impossible to be discovered by men, but they promised him, that if he would explain to them what dream he had seen, they would tell him its signification. Hereupon he threatened to put them to death, unless they told him his dream, and he gave command to have them all put to death, since they confessed they could not do what they were commanded to do. Now when Daniel heard that the king had given a command, that all the wise men should be put to death, and that among them himself and his 3 kinsmen were in danger, he went to Arioch, who was captain of the king's guards, and desired to know of him what was the reason why the king had given command that all the wise men, and Chaldeans, and magicians should be slain. So when he had learned that the king had had a dream, and had forgotten it, and that when they were enjoined to inform the king of it, they had said they could not do it, and had thereby provoked him to anger, he desired of Arioch, that he would go into the king, and desire respite, for the magicians for 1 night, and to put off their slaughter so long, for that he hoped within that time to obtain, by prayer to God, the knowledge of the dream. Accordingly, Arioch informed the king of what Daniel desired. So the king bid them delay the slaughter of the magicians till he knew what Daniel's promise would come to, but the young man retired to his own house with his kinsmen, and besought God, that whole night, to discover the dream, and thereby deliver the magicians and Chaldeans, with whom they were themselves to perish, from the king's anger, by enabling him to declare his vision, and to make manifest what the king had seen the night before in his sleep, but had forgotten it. Accordingly, God, out of pity to those that were in danger, and out of regard to the wisdom of Daniel, made known to him the dream, and its interpretation, that so the king might understand by him its signification also. When Daniel had obtained this knowledge from God, he arose very joyful, and told it his brethren, and made them glad, and to hope well that they should now preserve their lives, of which they despaired before, and had their minds full of nothing but the thoughts of dying. So when he had with them returned thanks to God, who had commiserated their youth, when it was that he came to Arioch, and desired him to bring him to the king, because he would discover to him that dream which he had seen the night before. When Daniel was come into the king, he excused himself first, that he did not pretend to be wiser than the other Chaldeans and magicians, when, upon their entire inability to discover his dream, he was undertaking to inform him of it, for this was not by his own skill, or on account of his having better cultivated his understanding, and the rest, but he said, God hath had pity upon us, when we were in danger of death, and when I prayed for the life of myself, and of those of my own nation, hath made manifest to me both the dream, and the interpretation thereof, for I was not less concerned for thy glory, and for the sorrow, that we were by thee condemned to die, while thou didst so unjustly command men, both good and excellent in themselves, to be put to death, when thou enjoinedst them to do what was entirely above the reach of human wisdom, and requiredst of them what was only the work of God. Wherefore, as thou in thy sleep wast solicitous concerning those that should succeed thee in the government of the whole world, God was desirous to show thee all those that should reign after thee, and to that end exhibited to thee the following dream. Thou seemedst to see a great image standing before thee, the head of which proved to be of gold, the shoulders and arms of silver, and the belly, and the thighs of brass, but the legs, and the feet of iron. After which thou sawest a stone broken off from a mountain, which fell upon the image, and threw it down, and brake it to pieces, and did not permit any part of it to remain whole, but the gold, the silver, the brass, and the iron, became smaller, and meal, which, upon the blast of a violent wind, was by force carried away, and scattered abroad. But the stone did increase to such a degree, that the whole earth beneath it seemed to be filled therewith. This is the dream which thou sawest, and its interpretation is as follows: the head of gold denotes thee, and the kings of Babylon, that heaven before thee, but the two hands and arms signify this, that your government shall be dissolved by two kings, but another king, that shall come from the west, armed with brass, shall destroy that government, and another government, that shall be like unto iron, shall put an end to the power of the former, and shall have dominion over all the earth. On account of the nature of iron, which is stronger than that of gold, of silver, and of brass. Daniel did also declare the meaning of the stone to the king, but I do not think proper to relate it, since I have only undertaken to describe things past or things present, but not things that are future. Yet if any one be so very desirous of knowing truth, as not to weigh such points of curiosity, and cannot curb his inclination for understanding the uncertainties of futurity, and whether they will happen, or not, let him be diligent in reading the book of Daniel, which he will find among the sacred writings. When Nebuchadnezzar heard this, and recollected his dream, he was astonished at the nature of Daniel, and fell upon his knee, and saluted Daniel, in the manner that men worship God, and gave command that he should be sacrificed to, as a god. And this was not all, for he also imposed the name of his own god upon him, Belteshazzar, and made him and his kinsmen rulers of his whole kingdom, which kinsmen of his happened to fall into great danger by the envy and malice of their enemies, for they offended the king upon the occasion following. He made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and its breadth 6 cubits, and set it in the great plain of Babylon, and when he was going to dedicate the image, he invited the principal men out of all the earth that was under his dominions, and commanded them, in the first place, that when they should hear the sound of the trumpet, they should then fall down and worship the image, and he threatened, that those who did not so, should be cast into a fiery furnace. When therefore all the rest, upon the hearing of the sound of the trumpet, worshipped the image, they relate that Daniel's kinsmen did not do it, because they would not transgress the laws of their country. So these men were convicted, and cast immediately into the fire, but were saved by divine providence, and after a surprising manner escaped death, for the fire did not touch them, and I suppose that it touched them not, as if it reasoned with itself, that they were cast into it without any fault of theirs, and that therefore it was too weak to burn the young men, when they were in it. This was done by the power of God, who made their bodies so far superior to the fire, that it could not consume them. This it was which recommended them to the king, as righteous men, and men beloved of God, on which account they continued in great esteem with him. A little after this the king saw in his sleep again another vision, how he should fall from his dominion, and feed among the wild beasts, and that when he halt lived in this manner, in the desert for 7 years, he should recover his dominion again. When he had seen this dream, he called the magicians together again, and inquired of them about it, and desired them to tell him what it signified, but when none of them could find out the meaning of the dream, nor discover it to the king, Daniel was the only person that explained it, and, as he foretold, so it came to pass. For after he had continued in the wilderness the forementioned interval of time, while no one durst attempt to seize his kingdom during those 7 years, he prayed to God that he might recover his kingdom, and he returned to it. But let no one blame me for writing down everything of this nature, as I find it in our ancient books, for as to that matter, I have plainly assured those that think me defective in any such point, or complain of my management, and have told them in the beginning of this history, that I intended to do no more than translate the Hebrew books into the Greek language, and promised them to explain those facts, without adding anything to them of my own, or taking anything away from there. Chapter 11. Now when King Nebuchadnezzar had reigned 43 years, he ended his life. He was an active man, and more fortunate than the kings that were before him. Now Berozes makes mention of his actions in the third book of his Chaldaic history, where he says thus, when his father Nabuchodonosor Nabopolassar heard that the governor, whom he had set over Egypt, and the places about Syria and Phoenicia, had revolted from him, while he was not himself able any longer to undergo the hardships of war he committed to his son Nebuchadnezzar, who was still but a youth, some parts of his army, and sent them against him. So when Nebuchadnezzar had given battle, and fought with the rebel, he beat him, and produced the country from under his subjection, and made it a branch of his own kingdom. But about that time it happened that his father Nabuchodonosor Nabopolassar fell ill, and ended his life, in the city Babylon, when he had reigned 21 years, and when he was made sensible, as he was in little time, that his father Nabuchodonosor Nabopolassar was dead, and having settled the affairs of Egypt, and the other countries, as also those that concerned the captive Jews, and Phoenicians, and Syrians, and those of the Egyptian nations, and having committed the conveyance of them to Babylon, to certain of his friends, together with the gross of his army, and the rest of their ammunition and provisions, he went himself hastily, accompanied with a few others, over the desert, and came to Babylon. So he took upon him the management of public affairs, and of the kingdom which had been kept for him by one, that was the principal of the Chaldeans, and he received the entire dominions of his father, and appointed, that when the captives came, they should be placed as colonies, in the most proper places of Babylonia, But then he adorned the temple of Belus, and the rest of the temples, in a magnificent manner, with the spoils he had taken in the war. He also added another city to that which was there of old, and rebuilt it, that such as would besiege it hereafter might no more turn the course of the river, and thereby attack the city itself. He therefore built three walls round about the inner city, and three others, about that which was the outer, and this he did with burnt brick. And after he had, after becoming manor, walled the city, and adorned its gates gloriously, he built another palace, before his father's palace, but so that they joined to it, to describe whose vast height and immense riches it would perhaps be too much for me to attempt, yet as large and lofty as they were completed in 15 days. He also erected elevated places for walking, of stone, and made it resemble mountains, and built it so that it might be planted with all sorts of trees. He also erected what was called a pencil paradise, because his wife was desirous to have things like her own country, she having been bred up in the palaces of Media. Megasthenes also, in his fourth book of his accounts of India, makes mention of these things, and thereby endeavors to show that this King Nebuchadnezzar exceeded Hercules in fortitude, and in the greatness of his actions, for he saith that he conquered a great part of Libya and Iberia. Diocl also, in the second book of his accounts of Persia, mentions this king, as does Philostrates, in his accounts both of India and of Phoenicia, say, that this king besieged Tyre 13 years, while at the same time Ethbaal reigned at Tyre. These are all the histories that I have met with concerning this king. But now, after the death of Nebuchadnezzar, Evil-Merodach his son succeeded in the kingdom, who immediately set Jeconiah at liberty, and esteemed him among his most intimate friends. He also gave him many presents, and made him honorable, above the rest of the kings that were in Babylon, for his father had not kept his faith with Jeconiah, when he voluntarily delivered up himself to him, with his wives and children, and his whole kindred, for the sake of his country, that it might not be taken by siege, and utterly destroyed, as we said before. When Evil-Merodach was dead, after a reign of 18 years, Niglissar his son took the government, and retained it 40 years, and then ended his life, and after him the succession in the kingdom came to his son Labozordach, who continued in it in all but 9 months, and when he was dead, it came to Baltasar, who by the Babylonians was called Nabu-undelus. Against him did Cyrus, the king of Persia, and Darius, the king of Media, make war, and when he was besieged in Babylon, there happened a wonderful and prodigious vision. He was sat down at supper in a large room, and there were a great many vessels of silver, such as were made for royal entertainments, and he had with him his concubines, and his friends, whereupon he came to a resolution, and commanded that those vessels of God which Nebuchadnezzar had plundered out of Jerusalem, and had not made use of, but had put them into his own temple, should be brought out of that temple. He also grew so haughty, as to proceed to use them in the midst of his cups, drinking out of them, and blaspheming against God. In the meantime, he saw a hand proceed out of the wall, and writing upon the wall certain syllables, at which sight, being disturbed, he called the magicians and Chaldeans together, and all that sort of men, that are among these barbarians, and were able to interpret signs and dreams, that they might explain the writing to him. But when the magicians said they could discover nothing, nor did understand it, the king was in great disorder of mind, and under great trouble at this surprising accident, so he caused it to be proclaimed through all the country, and promised that to him who could explain the writing, and give the signification couched therein, he would give him a golden chain for his neck, and leave to wear a purple garment, as did the kings of Chaldea, and would bestow on him a third part of his own dominions. When this proclamation was made, the magicians ran together more earnestly, and were very ambitious to find out the importance of the writing, but still hesitated about it as much as before. Now when the king's grandmother saw him cast down at this accident, she began to encourage him, and to say, that there was a certain captive who came from Judea, a Jew by birth, but brought away thence by Nebuchadnezzar, when he had destroyed Jerusalem, whose name was Daniel, a wise man, and one of great sagacity, in finding out what was impossible for others to discover, and what was known to God alone. Who brought to light and answered such questions to Nebuchadnezzar, as no one else was able to answer when they were consulted. She therefore desired that he would send for him, and inquire of him concerning the writing, and to condemn the unskillfulness of those that could not find their meaning, and this, although what God signified thereby should be of a melancholy nature. When Balthasar heard this, he called for Daniel, and when he had discoursed to him what he had learned concerning him and his wisdom, and how a divine spirit was with him, and that he alone was fully capable of finding out what others would never have thought of, he desired him to declare to him what this writing meant, that if he did so, he would give him leave to wear purple, and to put a chain of gold about his neck, and would bestow on him a third part of his dominion, as an honorary reward for his wisdom, that thereby he might become illustrious to those who saw him, and who inquired upon what occasion he obtained such honors. But Daniel desired that he would keep his gifts to himself, for what is the effect of wisdom, and of divine revelation admits of no gifts, and bestows its advantages on petitioners freely, but that still he would explain the writing to him, which denoted that he should soon die, and this, because he had not learned to honor God, and not to admit things above human nature, by what punishments his progenitor had undergone for the injuries he had offered to God. And because he had quite forgotten how Nebuchadnezzar was removed to feed among wild beasts for his impieties, and did not recover his former life among men, and his kingdom, but upon God's mercy, to him, after many supplications and prayers, who did thereupon praise God all the days of his life, as one of almighty power, and who takes care of mankind. He also put him in mind how he had greatly blasphemed against God, and had made use of his vessels amongst his concubines, that therefore God saw this, and was angry with him, and declared by this writing beforehand what a sad conclusion of his life he should come to. And he explained the writing thus: MANEH. This, if it be expounded in the Greek language, may signify a number, because God hath numbered so long a time for thy life, and for thy government, and that there remains but a small portion. Thecel, this signifies a weight, and means, that God hath weighed thy kingdom in a balance, and finds it going down already, phars. This also, in the Greek tongue, denotes a fragment. God will therefore break thy kingdom in pieces, and divide it among the Medes and Persians. When Daniel had told the king that the writing upon the wall signified these events, Balthasar was in great sorrow and affliction, as was to be expected, when the interpretation was so heavy upon him. However, he did not refuse what he had promised Daniel, although he were become a foreteller of misfortunes to him, but bestowed it all upon him, as reasoning thus, that what he was to reward was peculiar to himself, and to fate, and did not belong to the prophet, but that it was the part of a good and a just man to give what he had promised, although the events were of a melancholy nature. Accordingly, the king determined so to do. Now, after a little while, both himself and the city were taken by Cyrus, the king of Persia, who fought against him, for it was Balthasar, under whom Babylon was taken, when he had reigned 17 years. And this is the end of the posterity of King Nebuchadnezzar, as history informs us. But when Babylon was taken by Darius, and when he, with his kinsman Cyrus, had put an end to the dominion of the Babylonians, he was 62 years old. He was the son of Astyages, and had another name among the Greeks. Moreover, he took Daniel the prophet, and carried him with him into Media, and honored him very greatly, and kept him with him, for he was one of the 3 presidents, whom he set over his 360 provinces, for into so many did Darius part them. However, while Daniel was in so great dignity, and in so great favor with Darius, and was alone entrusted with everything by him, a having somewhat divine in him, he was envied by the rest, for those that see others in greater honor, and themselves with kings envy them, and when those that were grieved at the great favor Daniel was in with Darius sought for an occasion against him, he afforded them no occasion at all, for he was above all the temptations of money, and despised bribery, and esteemed it a very base thing, to take anything by way of reward, even when it might be justly given him. He afforded those that envied him not the least handle for an accusation. So when they could find nothing for which they might calumniate him to the king, nothing that was shameful or reproachful, and thereby deprive him of the honor he was in with him, they sought for some other method, whereby they might destroy him. When therefore they saw that Daniel prayed to God three times a day, they thought they had gotten an occasion by which they might ruin him. So they came to Darius, and told him that the princes and governors had thought proper to allow the multitude a relaxation for 30 days, that no one might offer a petition or prayer, either to himself, or to the gods, but that he, who shall transgress this decree shall be east into the den of lions, and there perish. Whereupon the king, not being acquainted with their wicked design, nor suspecting that it was a contrivance of theirs against Daniel, said he was pleased with this decree of theirs, and he promised to confirm what they desired. He also published an edict to promulgate to the people that decree which the princes had made. Accordingly, all the rest took care not to transgress those injunctions, and rested in quiet, but Daniel had no regard to them, but, as he was wont, he stood, and prayed to God, in the sight of them all. But the princes, having met with the occasion they so earnestly sought to find against Daniel, came presently to the king, and accused him, that Daniel was the only person that transgressed the decree, while not one of the rest durst pray to their gods. This discovery they made, not because of his impiety, but because they had watched him, and observed him out of envy, for supposing that Darius did thus out of a greater kindness to him than they expected, and that he was ready to grant him pardon for this contempt of his injunctions, and envying this very pardon to Daniel, they did not become more honorable to him, but desired he might be cast into the den of lions according to the law. So Darius, hoping that God would deliver him, and that he would undergo nothing that was terrible by the wild beasts, bid him bear this accident cheerfully. And when he was cast into the den, he put his seal to the stone that lay upon the mouth of the den, and went his way. But he passed all the night without food, and without sleep, being in great distress for Daniel. But when it was day, he got up, and came to the den, and found the seal entire, which he had left the stone sealed withal. He also opened the seal, and cried out, and called to Daniel, and asked him if he were alive. And as soon as he heard the king's voice, and said that he had suffered no harm, the king gave order that he should be drawn up out of the den. Now when his enemies saw that Daniel had suffered nothing which was terrible, they would not own that he was preserved by God, and by his providence, but they said that the lions had been filled full with food, and on that account it was, as they supposed, that the lions would not touch Daniel, nor come to him. And this they alleged to the king. But the king, out of an abhorrence of their wickedness, gave order that they should throw in a great deal of flesh to the lions. And when they had filled themselves, he gave further order that Daniel's enemies should be cast into the den, that he might learn whether the lions, now they were full, would touch them or not. And it appeared plain to Darius, after the princes had been cast to the wild beasts, that it was God who preserved Daniel. For the lions spared none of them, but tore them all to pieces, as if they had been very hungry, and wanted food. I suppose therefore it was not their hunger, which had been little before satisfied with abundance of flesh, but the wickedness of these men, that provoked them to destroy the princes. For if it so please God, that wickedness might, by even those irrational creatures, be esteemed a plain foundation for their punishment. When therefore those that had intended thus to destroy Daniel by treachery were themselves destroyed, King Darius sent letters over all the country, and praised that God, whom Daniel worshipped, and said that he was the only true God, and had all power. He had also Daniel in very great esteem, and made him the principal of his friends. Now when Daniel was become so illustrious and famous, on account of the opinion men had that he was beloved of God, he built a tower at Ecbatana, in Media. It was a most elegant building, and wonderfully made, and it is still remaining, and preserved to this day. And to such as see it, it appears to have been lately built, and to have been no older than that very day. When anyone looks upon it, it is so fresh flourishing, and beautiful, and no way grown old in so long time, for buildings suffer the same as men do, they grow old as well, as they, and by numbers of years their strength is dissolved, and their beauty withered. Now they bury the kings of Media, of Persia, and Parthia, in this tower to this day. And he, who was entrusted with the care of it was a Jewish priest, which thing is also observed to this day. But it is fit to give an account of what this man did, which is most admirable to hear. For he was so happy, as to have strange revelations made to him, and those as to one of the greatest of the prophets, insomuch, that while he was alive he had the esteem and applause both of the kings, and of the multitude, and now he is dead, he retains a remembrance that will never fail. For the several books that he wrote, and left behind him are still read by us till this time, and from them we believe that Daniel conversed with God. For he did not only prophesy of future events, as did the other prophets, but he also determined the time of their accomplishment. And while prophets used to foretell misfortunes, and on that account were disagreeable both to the kings, and to the multitude, Daniel was to them a prophet of good things, and this to such a degree, that by the agreeable nature of his predictions, he procured the goodwill of all men. And by the accomplishment of them, he procured the belief of their truth, and the opinion of a sort of divinity, for himself, among the multitude. He also wrote, and left behind him what made manifest the accuracy, and undeniable veracity of his predictions, for he saith that when he was in Susa, the metropolis of Persia, and went out into the field with his companions, there was, on the sudden, a motion and concussion of the earth, and that he was left alone by himself, his friends fleeing away from him, and that he was disturbed, and fell on his face, and on his two hands, and that a certain person touched him, and, at the same time, bid him rise, and see what would befall his countrymen, after many generations. He also related that when he stood up, he was shown a great train, with many horns growing out of his head, and that the last was higher than the rest, that after this he looked to the west, and saw a he-goat carried through the air from that quarter, that he rushed upon the ram with violence, and smote him twice with his horns, and overthrew him to the ground, and trampled upon him. That afterward he saw a very great horn growing out of the head of the he-goat, and that when it was broken off, four horns grew up that were exposed to each of the four winds, and he wrote that out of them arose another lesser horn, which, as he said, waxed great, and that God showed to him that it should fight against his nation, and take their city by force, and bring the temple worship to confusion, and forbid the sacrifices to be offered for 1,296 days. Daniel wrote that he saw these visions in the plain of Susa, and he hath informed us that God interpreted the appearance of this vision, after the following manner. He said, that the ram signified the kingdoms of the Medes and Persians, and the horns those kings, that were to reign in them, and that the last horn signified the last king, and that he should exceed all the kings in riches and glory, that the he-goat signified that one should come, and reign from the Greeks, who should twice fight with the Persian, and overcome him in battle, and should receive his entire dominion, that by the great horn which sprang out of the forehead of the he-goat was meant the first king, and that the springing up of four horns upon its falling off, and the conversion of every one of them to the four quarters of the earth, signified the successors, that should arise after the death of the first king, and the partition of the kingdom among them, and that they should be neither his children, nor of his kindred, that should reign over the habitable earth for many years, and that from among them there should arise a certain king, that should overcome our nation, and their laws, and should take away their political government, and should spoil the temple, and forbid the sacrifices to be offered for 3 years' time. And indeed it so came to pass, that our nation suffered these things under Antiochus Epiphanes, according to Daniel's vision, and what he wrote many years before they came to pass. In the very same manner Daniel also wrote concerning the Roman government, and that our country should be made desolate by them. All these things did this man leave in writing, as God had showed them to him, insomuch that such as read his prophecies, and see how they have been fulfilled, would wonder at the honor wherewith God honored Daniel, and may thence discover how the Epicureans are in an error, who cast providence out of human life, and do not believe that God takes care of the affairs of the world, nor that the universe is governed and continued in being by that blessed and immortal nature. But say that the world is carried along of its own accord, without a ruler and a curator, which, were it destitute of a guide to conduct it, as they imagine, it would be, like ships without pilots, which we see drowned by the winds, or like chariots without drivers, which are overturned, so would the world be dashed to pieces by its being carried without a providence, and so perish, and come to naught. So that, by the forementioned predictions of Daniel, those men seem to me very much to err from the truth, who determine that God exercises no providence over human affairs, for if that were the case, that the world went on by mechanical necessity, we should not see that all things would come to pass according to his prophecy. Now as to myself, I have so described these matters, as I have found them, and read them, but if anyone is inclined to another opinion about them, let him enjoy his different sentiments, without any blame from me. The End of Antiquities of the Jews Book 10.
Be sure and visit www.paradisepbc.org, and find many more study resources and MP3 audio files.